Parshas Mishpatim. Ve'ele ha-mishpatim asher tosim lifneihem. These are the laws that you shall place in front of them. We know the Torah then lists out for us the instructions for dayonim and those paskening shailos. Now, the Gemara Yerushalmi in Sanhedrin says a very strange thing. Rav Shimon ben Yochai said about himself, Boruch Rachmona, which translated is Boruch Hashem, Delina Chachim Meidoin, that I am not qualified to be a Dayan. Boruch Hashem. It's interesting, I'm reminded of the story of the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer, as a Bocher, had a Shidduch suggested to him. A daughter of a very, very wealthy individual who wanted the Chassam Sofer to be his son-in-law. And when the Chassam Sofer investigated into the Shidduch, he discovered that the prospective father-in-law had a position in Rabbonus set up for his potential son-in-law, whoever it may be. In other words, the Chassam Sofer understood that he wants me to marry his daughter and become a Rav in a certain area. So on that basis, he refused the Shidduch. He discussed it afterwards with the Machatzis HaShekel of the Gedolei Achrenim, and the Machatzis HaShekel told him, he said, all my life I managed to escape, I managed to squirm out and not become a Rav. But he said, you do gate Zayin a Rav. He said, you're going to be a Rav, he told the Chassam Sofer. There's no way you can get out of it, even though you successfully managed to squirm out on this occasion. I will do gate Zayin a Rav, you're going to be a Rav. And the rest, as they say, is history. So I read in the Chutam Meshulash, the Chassam Sofer used to say to his Talmidim after he became the big Rav and Rosh Hashiva and the Rabbon Shel Kol Klal Yisrael, he said, he looked back and he said, Niskayim bi, it was fulfilled in me, Kilalas HaTzadik, the curse of the Tzadik. In other words, he said, I'm going to become a Rav, and his curse became true. But I'll call upon him, Rav Shimon ben Yochai was saying, Boruch Rachmona, Delena Chachim Midain, that I don't know, I'm disqualified from being a Dayan. What does that mean? How do we possibly understand that Rav Shimon ben Yochai, the great Tanna, in what way was he disqualified for being a Tanna? Rav Shimon ben Yochai, who is the author of the Zoya, Megalatras, all these sages of Torah, Torah Hanista, besides, of course, we're appearing all over Shas in Torah Hanigle, Mishnayos. What does that mean that he considered himself not worthy or not fitting, perhaps, to be a Dayan or to be a Rav? So I saw a very novel approach, a very interesting mahalach in the Sefer Be'er Yosef Alateya. Be'er Yosef says, you would have thought, perhaps, and this is a mistake, you would have been forgiven for thinking that when you're choosing somebody who's going to pass in a Shaila, a Dayan, a Rav, so you want somebody who is completely disassociated with people, who doesn't involve himself with people, has no connection to people. Why would you think that automatically is a qualification for being a Rav? Because otherwise, if he knows too many people, then he's going to have his own bias, and he's going to have his own agenda. And we know that one of the prime qualifications, one of the main qualifications for being a Dayan, the Torah says, Lo sakiru ponim b'mishpat, you may not judge favorably in favor of anybody. So maybe you should have somebody who lives as a hermit in an ivory tower in some island, he knows nobody, has no interaction with anybody. Says the Be'er Yosef, in fact the opposite is true. If somebody is cut off completely from humanity and people in general, and has no interaction with people, then he's disqualified from being a Dayan. And he explains the reason is because, as many have phrased this, when a Rav is, or a Dayan is fahed, he needs to know Dalet Chelkei Shulchan Aruch, he needs to know four Chalokim, but there's also the fifth Chelik. What is the fifth Chelik? There is no fifth Chelik. But the phrase goes, the fifth Chelik of Shulchan Aruch is, you have to understand, you have to have a bit of Seichel. You have to have the understanding of how people work. You have to know how to be able to read in between the lines and understand the way a person's mind works. Just in brackets, in parenthesis, we're going to say a few stories tonight, but this is one of them. The Chassam Sofer had a Talmud who took up a position of a Rav of a shul. And I mentioned this in the shul the other day. And he came to his Rebbe, the Chassam Sofer, for a faher, and the Chassam Sofer tested him on all four halakim of Shulchan Aruch, and he passed with flying colors. And the Chassam Sofer told him, wonderful, you know four halakim of Shulchan Aruch, but it's crucial if you're becoming a Rav, you must know the fifth chalak. So he said to him, what is the fifth chalak? He said, the fifth chalak is, he said it in Yiddish, vi medaf tzachfirem mit menschen, how to get along with people. Very, very important. How to get along with people is a crucial qualification. If you don't know that, the fifth chalak, you won't be qualified for being a Rav. Fine. A year later, he comes back to the Chassam Sofer and he says, I'm out of the job. He says, why? I'm no longer a Rav. I fell out with the tzibur. I couldn't get along with him. He said, I told you, you have to know not just the four halakim of Shulchan Aruch, you need to know the fifth chalak, how to get on with menschen, how to get on with people. He said, yeah, the problem is, you never told me about the sixth chalak. He said, what was the sixth chalak? The Talmud said, the sixth chalak is, how do you get along with nisht menschen? How do you get along with people who are not people? That you did not tell me. And that's why he fell out. I'll call upon him by Ifan. So this is a very big yesod, which the Vilna Goyen, in many, many places, tells us. Remember the pasuk that says that a dayan is not allowed to take a bribe. Why not? So the pasuk says, ki hashoichad ya'aver einei chachamim. It can distort the wise eyes, the eyes of the wise one, and another place it calls them einei pikchim. Pikech is a wise person. So why is he being described as a chacham and as a pikeach? So the Vilna Goyen says, you know what a chacham means? A chacham is somebody who's very knowledgeable in Torah. That's one qualification. But there's another qualification, you have to be a pikeach, you have to be smart. You have to understand the workings of people. That's why it's not sufficient to be a chacham, one has to be a pikeach as well. Therefore, says the Be'er Yosef, Reb Shimon ben Yochai, who obviously was a Boki B'chol HaTorah Kula, no discussion about that. He was one of the Heilige Tanoim HaKadoshim. But we all know the story, what happened in Shabbos of Lamed Gimel Amud Beis. He was in the cave for 13 years and he came out and he was so elevating, not having seen anybody or interacted with any humanity for so long, that he saw somebody who was being Oisek in the Karka. And what did he say? He looked at him and he just burnt him up with his eyes. Until the Bas Koel says, be careful, you're ruining my bria. So he sent him back into the cave. So the Be'er Yosef says, that's what Reb Shimon ben Yochai was saying. When he said that I'm disqualified for being a dayan, it doesn't mean, chas v'shalom, I don't know Torah. Reb Shimon ben Yochai, the Tanya, knows everything. But because I haven't interacted with people for so long, I don't have that perhaps understanding and how the human mind and the human psyche works. And on that basis, I'm disqualified from being a dayan. We all know many stories of Gedolei Olam who paskened shailas not just by the strict letter of the law in accordance with what it says in Dalas Chelkei Shulchan Aruch. They were able, with their great koyach of being a pikeach, not necessarily with just being a chacham, but with being a pikeach, they were able to paskin shailas. For example, the famous story which we've mentioned in the past, very, very well known, the story of the Isha Aguna, the woman whose husband disappears without trace, the tragic scenario, she cannot marry. And decades later, this fellow turns up and he says, I am the husband. Really? You don't look like my husband. Well, over the years I've changed. Prove to me you're my husband. He says, well, ask me whatever you like. So she asks him all types of questions about the family and about the history and about, he knows everything. She just has a very uneasy feeling. It's true, he knows all the family secrets and he knows when my birthday is and what my favorite food was and where we once went on holiday. He seems to know everything. But I just have an uneasy feeling. I don't know, is he really my husband? So they took him to the Vilna Goyen. And the Vilna Goyen famously said, okay, there's one question you should ask him. You haven't asked him yet. Take him to shul and ask him, where's your seat in shul? And they took him to shul and he had no idea. And they proved he was a total fraud. He was a Rosh Hagom. They asked the Vilna Gaon, why, or Novi, how did you know that? How did you know that? That'd be the one question that would be the real acid test, and it did indeed prove to be the case. Must be a Novi, it has nothing to do with Nevius. He says, I know that this person, you could see. But at least if there was a concern that this person was indeed a Rasha, which indeed it turns out he was, then he might well think of every last question that will be asked of him. But one thing you can be for sure, he'll never think of a Dovah Shabikdusha. He won't think of investigating that. In other words, he's clearly done his homework. He'd obviously done all his inquiries and investigation about the family and about this woman in particular. But be rest assured, if indeed he was a Rasha, which indeed he was, it would never enter his mind to ask about a Dovah Shabikdusha. Which Sifan Shulchan Aruch is that the Vilna Gaon paskens with? Pikeach, to Koyach of Torah, obviously. Somebody knocks on the Beis HaLevi's door on Erev Pesach and says, are you allowed to be Yotzei the mitzvah of Dalad Koseis with milk? The Beis HaLevi says, no, absolutely not. Here, I'll give you some money for wine. And he gave him a very, very big sum of money. And they asked him, what are you giving him such a big sum of money? How much does it cost really for 4 cups of wine? He said, not that much. But if somebody is asking me on Erev Pesach, can you be Yotzei Dalad Koseis with milk? Then he clearly doesn't have meat in the house either. Because he clearly is suffering from abject poverty, so I gave him money for both. Which Sifan Shulchan Aruch was that? Was that because he was a Chacham? Because he was a Pikeach, he was able to read in between the lines. The story was told, I think I mentioned this really in the Kriyas HaTorah. There was a town in Europe where the mayor of the city was a non-Jew. And without rhyme or reason, the mayor of the city, the Goyishan mayor, said, okay, there has to be a new Rav in the Kehillah. And not only that, I'm deciding who the new Rav is going to be. You're going to, what are you going to do? You're going to give him a Sahel and Shulchan Aruch? He says, you have to choose, as the Kehillah, 2 candidates who you consider eligible, and send them to me, and I'm going to decide who's going to be the town Rav. What a ridiculous state of affairs, but that's what he said. So the town came up with 2 candidates that they thought were indeed both eligible. One was a senior, elderly Talmud Chochem, with experience for many years, well versed in Shulchan Aruch. The second was undoubtedly a Talmud Chochem, but younger, less experienced, and not that big a Talmud Chochem. Certainly not as big as the first. And obviously all the Kehillah were hoping that the first candidate would get the job. He's a huge Talmud Chochem. But who knows, it's a toss of a coin, he's going to go to the non-Jewish mayor, and who knows what he's going to decide. They come to the non-Jewish mayor, the 2 candidates, and he says, fine, I'm now going to decide who's going to be the town Rav. He says, well, obviously I can't really test you on Jewish law, I don't know Jewish law. He says, here, bring me a siddur. They brought him a siddur. He says, listen, I'm going to open to any page at random, and I want you to read from that page. And if you read fluently, then you will qualify for the job. And if not, then he won't. That's going to be the acid test. Fine. He shows the siddur to the younger of the 2 candidates, and he opens it up, and his luck, which page was it? Ashrei. Well, who doesn't know Ashrei? So he reads it fluently, eloquently, plain sailing, very, very smooth. The mayor was very, very impressed. You read that very well. He now goes to the other candidate. I'm going to open the siddur at random. Let's see if you can read as fast, as best as your fellow over here. He opened it up. And his mazel, where did it open up to? Chvetus, Lichus of Shiva Osa B'Tamuz. Say once a year in very hard words. And he starts reading it and mumbling and fumbling. And it's very difficult. Okay, decided. The younger of the 2 is getting the job. Mazel tov, you're the Rav. The Kehillah was distraught. What a ridiculous state of affairs. That's how we're going to judge who becomes the Rav of this town, because he read Shiva Osa B'Tamuz Slichas, and he had good mazel, he opened up to Ashrei. So they went to Reb Chaim Brisker, and they asked Reb Chaim, what should we do? We've been stuck now with the wrong candidate. He said, what do you mean? And they described him, the older fellow, the younger fellow, the Ashrei. He said, no, The older of the two is not qualified to be a Rav. So what you mean is a huge Talmud Chacham. He says it's true, but if you'd only be a Pikeach, then he would have realized that this guy doesn't know how to read. So when he opened the Siddur to the Shiva Asur Talmud Slichas, he should have read Ashrei as well. And if he didn't, that's why he's disqualified. It's not good enough to be a big Talmud Chacham. From Seichel as well. The guy doesn't know how to read, so he should have read Ashrei as well. Somebody once came to the Satmar Rebbe. Satmar Rebbe Kiyodua had a lot of money that was people used to give him in order to distribute to the stockers. Somebody came to him and says, you know, I need a big sum of money, I'm on the verge of financial collapse, and I'm making a chasna, I need $5,000. If not, Mamash, I've got no way of making the chasna. So the Satmar Rebbe gave him $4,800. So when he left, the Gaboim said, if you're going to give him that much, you might as well give him 5,000, that's what he asked for. He said, no. If I would have given him 5,000, then he would forever be kicking himself, why didn't I ask him off? If I only would have asked for 10,000, I would have got 10. This way, I gave him 4,800, so he probably thought, fine, this is what I had available, so I had available. That's not a thief in Shulchan Aruch, that's being a pikeach. I once heard an unbelievable story. The Shulchan Aruch says, what happens if you have two babies in front of you and the moel is going to do the bris on both. So how many brachas does one say? Now we know, for example, if you are about to put up 10 mezuzahs in your house, you don't make 10 brachas. If you total 10 kalim, you don't make 10 brachas. If you shech 10 animals, you make one bracha and that's it. And indeed the Shulchan Aruch says that. You got two babies, you make brachas on the first one, and that will be, might see the second one, michal on the second one as well. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. The general minhag, however, is not that way, which is a very commonly asked question. As you all know, Mr. Ben Venisti, in the case of twins, you're going to mal one after the other. The general minhag is not in accordance with what it says in Shulchan Aruch. The Pitzchei Tshuva already says, brings Achrayim, that the minag in Mitzrayim was there used to be mapsik in between the two brithim, and you say some sukkim or you sing some songs, you make a little bit of delay, and on the second brith you make another set of brachas. That is the general minag. No paskin that way, but Rebbe Eliashiv did not. Rebbe Eliashiv, whenever he was asked this shaila, used to say, it says in Shulchan Aruch, one set of brachas. That's it. A Talmud of Rebbe Eliashiv had twins. Now, he wanted to be Mechabed, Rebbe Eliashiv, to be the Sandik for one of them, and Rebbe Shlomo Zalman Oyerbach to be the Sandik for the second. But here was the problem. He knows that his Rebbe, Rebbe Eliashiv, paskens that you don't make any hefsek between the two. One set of brachas, and you do the Brit Milah one after another, in which case he's going to have to be the Sandik for both, because there's no delay, there's no time. According to the way that everybody else paskens, it's fine. You do the first grace, you make a half an hour break, and then you call the second one. So he said, I've got a brilliant plan. He went to Rebbe Eliashiv, and he didn't tell Rebbe Eliashiv that he had twins. He says, I'm making a bris on Tuesday, I want to mechabed the Rav with being a Sandik. And he knew Rebbe Eliashiv doesn't hang about. He comes for the bris, and immediately when the bris is finished, he's left. He goes. So he's never going to know that actually 20 minutes later they're doing a second bris, in which case when Rav Shlomo Zalman was the Sandik. Okay, the plan is too good to be true. Vayi Hayoim, it comes the day Rav Eliashiv walks in and they do a bris on the first baby. Rav Eliashiv is the Sandik, Mazel Tov, he gets up and he walks over. He walks home, he left. 20 minutes later, Rav Shlomo Zalman, second baby, Sandik calls, and it all went to clockwork. Fine, so he tricked Rebbe Eliashiv, and he thought it was one baby, really it was two. This fellow, sometime after, got a position as a Rav in Chutz La'aretz. And he wanted to go to his Rebbe, Rebbe Eliashiv, for a bracha, or for a letter of hamlotza, of recommendation. So he went to Rebbe Eliashiv and says, Rebbe, I'm becoming a Rav in Chutz La'aretz, and I'd like a letter, please, from the Rav, please, a letter of recommendation. So Rebbe Eliashiv says to him with a twinkle in his eye, he says, what does that mean, you're a Rav? Presumably that means you're going to be paskening shailas if they're asked of you. He says, obviously, for sure. He says, really? So what are you going to pasken if they have twin babies? How many brothers? One or two? He he did not succeed in pulling the wool over Rabbi Yashin's eyes. Rabbi Yashin knew full well exactly what had happened, and Chochem, Pikeach, Rabbi Yashin was obviously both. So this is what we're being taught, that the qualification for being a Moireh HaRov, for being a Dayan, for being a Rov, is not just to be a Chochem, but it's to be a Pikeach as well. But I would add something that was told to me, very, very important. We know the Gemara already tells us the Tefillah of the Tanya, Shaloi Yikoshel B'dvar Halacha. After all the qualifications in the world, but the most important thing is to daven. As every Rav will tell you, every Dayan, that you have to daven, Chas Hashem, you shouldn't make a mistake in Halacha. Another famous story, I know we're telling a lot of stories this evening, but this is also in the Tshuva of the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer says, Maisa Barav Echad. He doesn't say who the Rav is, but it's reported that it was his own Rebbe, the Haflo. And he didn't want to write his Rebbe's name out of respect to the Rav. Why? What happened? The Maisa was as follows. Maisa Barav Echad. There was a big pot of milk boiling on the fire, and in flew a live chicken. And the chicken sort of fluttered about, and then they took the chicken out. So the question was, what do you do now with the milk? So this Rav Echad says, well, listen, if a chicken goes in milk, it's basar b'chalav, and it wasn't shishim, so it's basar b'chalav, you can't eat it, and not only can you not eat it, but you can't even give it to a goy either, because you're not allowed to benefit from basar b'chalav. You can't sell this to a goy. Therefore, throw it out. That's what he passed. So the Chassam Sofer writes in the Tshuva, an unbelievable thing happened. Because all of a sudden, everyone's thinking to themselves, one second, he's made a terrible mistake. Because the halacha is, it's true, basar b'chalav, you can't eat and you can't benefit. But that's only if it's the meat of an animal. Not if it's the meat of a bird. Basar oif is only basar b'chalav d'rabbanon. And basar b'chalav d'rabbanon, you can't eat, but you're allowed to have benefit. So they would have been allowed to give it to a goy. And he told them to throw out all the milk. All of a sudden they realized, no, he was right after all, for the wrong reason. Because when this bird flew in, the bird was alive. In which case, what do you have in this milk? Not just blias of meat, but also blias of eva min hachai. And a goy is not allowed to eat eva min hachai. Therefore he was right for the wrong reason. Indeed, you can't give this to a goy. Not because you can't benefit from basar b'chalav, that was the wrong reason, but it happens to be you're right for the wrong reason. This has got eva min hachai in it, and goy can't have eva min hachai. So my uncle once told me, Rav Yomtov Zange in Bnei Brak once told me that when the Maharsham, the great Maharsham, who was the great grandfather of Shom Shadron, came to Rav Shlomo Kluger, Hagoyim of Shlomo Kluger, one of the Gedolei Achronim, he came to be a Rav and he got tested on Dalet Chelkei Shulchan Aruch, and he knew it back to front, as the Maharsham obviously did. So after he got tested on Dalet Chelkei Shulchan Aruch, Rav Shlomo Kluger said, you knew Shulchan Aruch fantastically. Do you know the rules of paskening? Do you know the Klolei Hoiro'o? He says, what do you mean? The Prima Godin, in his introduction to Shulchan Aruch, has a whole list of how you pasken shayles. Does you mean the Prima Godin? He says, no, I don't mean that. The Chavazdach and Chesha Mishpot Simon Chav Hei also has a list of how you pasken shayles. You mean the Chavazdach? He says, no, I didn't mean that. He says, well, what did you mean? He said, do you know the basic rule of paskening? He says, what are you referring to? He says, the basic rule of paskening is you daven every day, that chas v'shalom, you shouldn't make a mistake in paskening halacha. That's the basic rule. So yes, a person has to be a chocham, and he has to be a pikeach, and he has to be mu'urav im habriyah, he has to have interaction with people, he has to be able to read in between the lines, and have the seichel to understand how people work. But achrei kechleis hakoil, he obviously has to daven, but he should never be nichshal chas v'shalom b'dvar halacha. In Perek Chof Beis, Pasuk Lamed, the Torah writes, "Va'amshe kodesh tihu li, ubosa basode treifa lo seichelu." You must not eat treifa. Now I must tell you, treifa is one of the most misused words in the Jewish language. Is this kosher or is it treif? Treifa in the Torah means, from the word teref, clawed or bitten into. Treifa, it's suffering an injury. If a wolf comes and he's teref, he rips a piece of flesh out of the sheep such that it's rendered it a treifa, because this sheep is going to die within 12 months, the Gemara says, then you may not eat that treifa. How does the pasuk continue? La kelev tashlichun oise. Rather, you give it to the dog. Why did you give it to the dog? So we know the Rashi. Rashi tells us, Hakoras HaTov to the dog. Why Hakoras HaTov? Because they did not bark. Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu makapeach schar kol beri. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't withhold the schar of anybody. Ukol b'nei Yisrael layechat kelev v'shoina. In the times of Mitzrayim, when all the Bechorim were dying, as Mephoroshim explained, when the Malach HaMavis is around, the nature of dogs is to bark. And they didn't bark. Because they didn't bark, give them their schar. Give them their schar. So you see clearly that what is the mitzvah or the issa of treifa teaching us? The union of Hakoras HaTov. Hakoras HaTov to dogs! Because they didn't bark. I remember I used to hear in Gateshead, at the Zuchus to learn with Rabbi Yankel Erentroy, who was the Rosh Hashiva of Sunderland Yeshiva. And he once stood up at the Sheva Brachos and he said, can you imagine the scene over here? Klal Yisrael over 2 decades, 2 centuries in Mitzrayim. Back-breaking labor. And finally the great moment has arrived, they're leaving. Can you imagine the euphoria? Can you imagine the simcha? Do you think they even batted an eyelid? Do you think they noticed that a dog did bark or didn't bark? It's a nafkamina. You're sitting at home all calm and you want a nice peaceful rest. Then it's true, you'd rather that the dogs are not barking. You appreciate when they're not barking. You're leaving Mitzrayim, the Geula, which has been waited for years and years, decades after decades, centuries after centuries, that the dogs didn't bark. You always used to say, it's true, they probably hardly noticed it. Hardly. But at the end of the day, a Yid's life was made a little bit more geschmack. That's enough for Hakoras HaTov. You're right, it was eclipsed, undoubtedly, by the total ecstasy of the fact they could finally leave Mitzrayim. But there's 2 ways you can leave Mitzrayim. Either with bedlam, dogs barking in your ears, or not with dogs barking in your ears. So their life was made a little bit more comfortable. You have to give Hakoras HaTov. But listen to what the Da'as HaKeinim says. The Da'as HaKeinim, Alat Tebali HaTosfot, says, also in line with Rashi, but a very beautiful translation. He also says that what's going on over here is Hakoras HaTov. He says there exists what's called a sheepdog. A sheepdog. Now, he says, let's imagine a scenario. How did this sheep become a treifa? Well, obviously one day, a wolf came along, made its way into the flock, and bit and attacked one of the sheep, and rendered him a treifa, which means that the sheepdog didn't really do his job. Because that was his job, to fend off the wolf. Says the Da'as HaKeinim, such a beautiful translation. On the day that the wolf comes and he rips a piece of flesh out of the sheep, that's all of a sudden a reminder, and what about all the days that the sheepdog did do his job? When do we notice how we need our little finger? And we get a bruise on it and we realize we can't do everything, and suddenly we realize, what about all the days that I didn't have a bruise? I remember as a young boy in school playing cricket once. And a ball hit me on a small finger. I'm sorry, the Americans, I don't know what cricket is. It's the, how do we explain to Americans? Baseball. Oh, baseball, please, Hasan Shalom. It's the upper class baseball. Not really the subject of our shir, but what is I remember a ball hit me on my little finger. Dislocated. Didn't dislocate it. No. Nothing broken, nothing fractured, nothing dislocated, bruised. For 2 weeks, I struggled to do the buttons up on my shirt, to write, to put my tefillin on, and it suddenly opened my eyes. Your little finger! We have opened the eyes. When do we have our eyes open? Suddenly we have a Karas HaTori, when it hurts. Says the Das Akenim, precisely when this animal ends up in a treifah, that's when Rakelev Tashlichonai say, give reward to the dog. What do you mean? He didn't do his job. Yeah, but doesn't it remind you about all the other days that he did? And as the Das Akenim says, more than that, how many sheep were attacked? One. So he did do his job today as well, because all the other 99 were safe. So Bosa Basoda Trefa Loisei Chelu Lakelev Tashlichun Oisei, remember that you have a Karas HaTov to the sheepdog, because he did his job every day until now when the wolf never attacked, and even today when he did, at least he was able to fend him off from the rest of the sheep. The Yisoid of a Karas HaTov, the Sefer HaChinuch teaches us, is, for example, the basis of the mitzvah of Kibud Av. Kibud Av Ve'Em. Why do we have to have respect for our parents? Well, they gave us so much. Says the Sefer HaChinuch, it's far deeper than that. Because if you have respect, and if you have a Karas HaTov for your parents, then that way you have a Karas HaTov for HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. But if you develop a mitzvah of doing the opposite of a Karas HaTov, which is being Kafui Toiv, then I don't have any appreciation for anyone, and therefore not even the Rabbeinu Shalom as well. What have I got to do with the Rabbeinu Shalom? It all belongs to me. The Chazon Ish was once approached by somebody who said to him this terrible phrase in Ivrit, Magia li Mazel Tov. We said it in Yiddish, Es kumt mir a Mazel Tov. Now, in English, doesn't quite translate. I get the Mazel Tov. He said, Es kumt mir a Mazel Tov. He said, Es kumt dir Gornish. I get a Mazel Tov. He said, you don't get anything. As if, I get it by rights. You're lucky enough, you're fortunate enough to have a Mazel Tov. Chaim Shmulevitz says a phenomenal thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, Nekoim Nikmas B'nei Yisrael. Seek vengeance of Klal Yisrael. How does that translate? Go and seek vengeance. Seems pretty straightforward. And five psukim later, what does the Torah tell us? Who did he send? Pinchas. Pinchas waged war against Midian. Because Baruch Hu told Moshe, you should do it. Says the Medrash, no, he couldn't. Because he was brought up in Midian. When he escaped from Mitzrayim, they protected him. So they had a Karas HaTov. How can I go and fight and wage war against Midian? Says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, one second, I don't understand. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told you to go and fight against Midian. Sorry, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh HaTov. You're more from than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is also very religious. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told you to go and fight against... I can't, because I've got HaKadosh HaTov. How can it be? How was he able to just completely disobey and ignore the instruction of the Rabbi Mishalayim? Says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, an unbelievable thing. We have Yud Gimel Midos Shatiran and Dreshes by him. 13 Midos by which we decode the Torah. When do we begin counting Sphere to Aimah? If you look in the Torah, what does it say? Mimochras, Miyayim, Shabbos, day after Shabbos. So we know that there were sects in Klal Yisrael who said, when do you begin counting Sfiras HaEmor? Always on a Sunday. It says, Mochas Yom HaShabbos. Chazal were able to derive, based on different drashas, it doesn't mean the day after Shabbos. What does it mean? Day after Yom Tov. Second day Pesach is when we begin Sfiras HaEmor. Now, if we ask ourselves a question, how can you disobey the Torah? The Torah says, day after Shabbos, what right have you got? The answer is, that's not called disobeying. When the Torah was given to us, it was given to us slightly encoded, in code fashion. We have tools by which we decode the Torah. Those are called the Midos Shatera and Adreshes for him. The Torah says, put on tefillin b'nei nechem. Indeed, there were sects in Klal Yisrael who said, you've got to take that literally, put the tefillin in between your eyes, on top of your nose. We don't put on tefillin there. If you put tefillin on there, you're not yet to the mitzvah, bracha levatala. Where is it? On top of your head, parallel to in between your eyes. How can they disobey the Torah? The answer is they're not disobeying. They're using the tools by which we decode the Torah to understand what the Torah really means. It says, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, Hakaras HaToiv is one of those midos shatira and midrashes b'hem. You have to decode the Torah using the tool called not just Gzeirah Shava, Kal V'chaymeh, Klal U'pratu Klal. There's a new tool, and you know what it's called? Hakaras HaToiv. By which you always have to read the psukim of the Torah through the prism of Hakaras HaToiv. In other words, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, go and fight against Midian, what does that obviously mean? Not to be compromising on HaKadosh HaToiv. So obviously what HaKadosh Baruch Hu really meant was, fight against Midian by sending a shliach. But you can't do it because HaKadosh HaToiv. But you're ignoring the instruction. I'm not. I'm interpreting the instruction. Hakaras HaToiv is one of the midoy shatirim midrashes for him. And he learned that, says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, from Mitzrayim. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, perform all of the makas Moshe Rabbeinu, but not done. You can't hit the Nile, why not? Because you are protected by the Nile. And don't hit the Nile for Tzvardeah, and neither the Kinim. Don't bang the earth, because you were the one who took some of the earth and you covered the Mitzrayim, you have Hakaras HaToiv. So what did Moshe Rabbeinu learn from there? That whatever the necessity, not at a compromise to Hakaras HaToiv. Rashi says, what was the Aveira of the Mei Meriva? When Moshe Rabbeinu was told to speak to the rock, so Rashi learns, but Rashi learns, what was the Aveira? You should have spoken to the rock. Why did you hit the rock? That's how Rashi learns. What's the big kasha? The Ramban asked the kasha. Moshe Rabbeinu was told, take your stick. So, the chayra, that means hit the rock. Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, no. The rock saved Moshe Rabbeinu. Chazal says when he was in the fields at a young age, he was the one who was ne'eneh from the rock. It provided him with dvash, and that's what sustained him. Therefore, he knew that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, take your stick, it cannot possibly be a compromise to Hakaras HaToiv. It must really therefore have meant speak to the rock. Therefore hitting the rock was indeed not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu meant. The story is told of Ifrah Zalman Meltzer at the end of his life. He's an old, elderly Yid, and he had a Talmud, Reb Sholem Eisen, who invited him to a bar mitzvah of his son. And he invited him out of respect, but he obviously didn't expect or didn't even want Rabbi Zalman to be mashriach himself to come to the bar mitzvah. The bar mitzvah didn't take place in a hall, not in those days in Yerushalayim. It took place in his little apartment. And all of a sudden there's a kafafel in the middle of the bar mitzvah, trudging up the steep stairs is Rabbi Zalman Meltzer. The great Rabbi Zalman Meltzer, he comes into the bar mitzvah, and then the father, the Baal Simcha, feels terrorized. I didn't expect him. I gave an invitation, but I gave it out of cover. The last thing I did was want a matriarch to come to the bar mitzvah and trudge up 20 stairs. He says, I owe the bar mitzvah boy a chorus, I tell you, that's why I have to come. You never even seen my son, you never spoke to him. He says, I'll tell you what happened. He says, when you gave me the bar mitzvah invitation, I looked at the invitation and I thought, wow, this boy is bar mitzvah. I remember when he was born. Time goes so fast. And he said, I got such a shock. He says, you know, I thought to myself, time flies. I've got to be chayzer b'tshuva. He says, because I had a thought of tshuva as a result of this bar mitzvah boy, I've got a chorus of faith. Chorus of faith. He brought about, indirectly, not knowingly, he caused me to have a hirhur tshuva, I've got a chorus of faith. Now, Rav Kornfeld, his Rebbe, one of his great Rebbeim was Yisrael Gustman, the great Dayan of Vilna. He moved to Yerushalayim to Seif Yomov. One of his Talmidim used to notice that Rav Gustman used to regularly water the grass outside his yeshiva. Talmud once asked Rosh Hashiva, it seems rather strange that Rosh Hashiva should see it important to water the flowers and water the grass. So he explained, he said, during the war I was escaping from the enemy. And there were times when I was caught alone in the forest and I had no sustenance and no food. And the only thing I could find to eat, otherwise I would have died, was a few berries and a few pickings from some plants I found. If I always have a Hakaras HaToiv to plants. That's why I water the plants, even as the great Dayan and great Rosh Hashiva. The man should Rosh Hashiva of Segal, Zecher Tzadik Levrach, whose yahrzeit was yesterday. His sukkah once collapsed on Yom Tov. So he had to go to a neighbor and said, please, could I eat a suda in your sukkah? Please, it's the greatest honor. Rosh Hashiva is eating my sukkah. From that year, every single year, the Rosh Hashiva used to go to his neighbor on the first day Yom Tov to make kiddush in his sukkah. He knew it would be a great kavod. He had a korosatei. He was more than happy to have me in his sukkah. It was the greatest delight from the biggest of a korosatei to him. Shom Shadron was once in England, in London, and he slipped and he fell. He was an old man, he was in his late 70s, and was not well, wasn't a well man at the time. Anybody here in his 70s, don't get a shock, it didn't mean that's old. But he, at his time, his yadua, was very frail at the time. He used to quote in his drushas regularly something that he was very, very taken by. That one of the big rebbes once slipped, fell over, and he was lying on the floor. The Rebbe says, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu make me slip? What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want from me? That's what he regularly used to quote in drushes. When this now happened to Rav Shom Shvadron, he slipped in London, fell over, broke his leg or injured his leg, and he remembered, one second, I always quote in drushes, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want from me? It's obviously happened for a reason. He was thinking, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want? Why did this happen? I can't think of any obvious reason. He said, I have to go and speak to the Rosh Hashiva. So he travelled as an ill man, just suffering from a leg injury, to Manchester. He went to the Manchester Rosh Hashiva. He said, I have to discuss something with the Rosh Hashiva. I don't know, I've fallen over, Kodesh Baruch Hu clearly has punished me, or is trying to tell me something. And he left the Rosh Hashiva, smiles all over his face. We've worked it out. What was it? Rav Sholem, as we know, used to go around the world speaking and fundraising. He says, I have an associate, somebody I know in America, who I owe a lot of Akaras HaTov to. He's helped me with a lot of my fundraising trips. And he invited me to attend the chasen of his son. So I said, Chomishka Koyach, I can't, it's too hard for me. I'm a man in my late 70s, and I'm not feeling well, and I'm frail, and I can't come. And clearly, if I fell over, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will teach me a lesson. You don't have Koyach, I'll make sure you don't have Koyach. So he phoned up, made a phone call to America. When was the chasna exactly? He said it was almost a week ago. Today is the last day of Sheva Brachos. They worked it out. He said if he could book a flight, which he did, he said delay the Sheva Brachos, keep it going. They made a chasna, I could still make it in time for the end of the Sheva Brachos. So he dropped everything, he booked the flight, he hopped over to America, hopped over a 7-hour flight from England. They schlepped out the Sheva Brachos. He arrived the last half an hour of the Sheva Brachos. He stood up, and Rav Sholem was a phenomenal speaker, and he was Mesameach Chosen Dekala. Why? Of course, it is. The Chofetz Chaim, a guest once came to the Chofetz Chaim, and they noticed the Chofetz Chaim gave him kaved malachim. He gave him a simple, very average posh tayyib. He said, what's his person? Is it a great Rosh Hashiva or something? He said, no, but this person's wife's great-grandfather once did me a chesed. Of course, that's it. I heard, unbelievable, the man Rosh Hashiva used to regularly learn Mishnayos, Le'ilu Nishmas, the Ramchal, and Le'ilu Nishmas, the Chofetz Chaim, and Le'ilu Nishmas, Rabbeinu Yonah, and Le'ilu Nishmas, all those who wrote Sforim, whom he thought that he benefited from and had a Koros HaTov to, and they helped him Avodas Hashem, therefore Koros HaTov, so I'm learning Mishnayos Le'ilu Nishmasam regularly. Rav Chatzkel Abramsky, and with this we'll finish, I know we have a lot of stories tonight. Rav Chatzkel Abramsky was once on a trip and he was in a hotel, and late at night he hears in the next neighbor, in the next room, he hears somebody davening. Yid sounds like an elderly Yid davening Ma'ariv. Very, very lengthy tefillin. He heals the person saying, thank you, Kodesh Baruch Hu, for my health. And thank you, Kodesh Baruch Hu, for my wealth. And thank you for giving me panos. And thank you for giving me a family. Thank you for giving me aslach. And thank you for giving me chokhma. Thank you for giving me a whole long, unbelievable list. The next day, he asked, as he checked out from his hotel, he asked the person in attendance, said, who's in the room next door me? He said, you don't know? Chofetz Chaim. That was the Chofetz Chaim's mind. HaKoras HaTov is a midah which really defines what we are, not so much what we do. We are called Yehudim. Yehudim means to thank. It's not something that we do. We are ever conscious of the chesed called neshima v'neshima that we have towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and in turn to anybody else who does us chesed. As we've mentioned in the past, and this we really will finish, every language has several words for what they consider important, as Daniel told us. How many words do they have in Italian for pizza? How many words apparently do they have for Eskimo language they have for snow? Because snow is very important in their language. For us, snow is snow. But how many words do we have to thank the Ribbono Shel Olam? As we're going to say on Shabbos, we say in Yishtabach some of the words, Lahoidois ulahalel, Lashabeach, Lafoir, Leroimim, Lavorech, Laale, Ulakales. That's a thank. No. Every word is a to praise and to exalt and to be Meroimim and to. Every word. Why do we have so many words? Why can't we just say Lahoidois? Because to us, thanking HaKoros HaTov is central not just to our Avodas Hashem, but central to our very being. We are Yehudim. And that's what we've been talking this week, Sarah. The treifa, la kelev tashlichonoi, so you give him to the dog because he didn't bark in Mitzrayim. No big deal! No, you're right, it's a small deal. But even for a small deal, he made a yiv's life kishmak, HaKoros HaTov. What the Dafa Kanan says. The sheepdog didn't do his job. Maybe today he slipped up. But isn't that a reminder of all the days that he didn't? When he did do his job? And isn't that a reminder that even when he didn't quite do his job, but he still protected all the other sheep? That's what we are. We are Yehudim. We are thankers. Not something that we just do, but that is really something that defines our entire essence.